Welcome to episode 24 of the British Ultra Running Podcast with your co-host James Elson and the British Road 6-day record holder
Dan Lawson. Is that me, yeah?
Did you have to check that that's you? Is it still too fresh? Are you still not sure?
No, it's been long. It's like a week. It's been a week. I feel like I should be starting to feel like a little bit normal again, but I'm still very tired. Yeah.
Woo!
And it's annoying me a little bit. Yeah.
What a race, buddy. What a race. I was on an emotional roller coaster at home just hearing about it. God only knows what it must have been like for you in the 6-day bubble of the EMU 6-day race.
It really was a bubble, yeah.
Tell us about it. So you went over to Hungary to run the 6-day, and it was a just underneath 1 kilometre loop, correct? Always in the same direction?
Yeah, it was. It was like 9.9 of a kilometre, which was a bit... I thought it was a kilometre loop, and after like 2 or 3 days, I realised that sometimes when I was doing calculations in my head about that numbers of laps and kilometres, I was doing less. That's when I realised it was a 0.9 kilometre loop rather than a 1 kilometre loop. Yeah.
So this is just over a week ago. How do you feel now?
What's that? Yeah, it's annoying me a little bit. I feel like I should be like starting to feel like a bit normal again, but I still don't. I'm really tired. Like I feel quite good for like a couple of hours, and then I just feel really tired.
Like deep fatigue, like you said.
Yeah, just like it's like a jet lag. Jet lag times 10, and it just comes and hits you. And it was the same. I remember it's the same kind of feeling after that the joggle run last year. So I'm trying to respect it a little bit more this time. So just give myself as much time as possible to recover, and then get back into training for October. Yeah.
Yeah. So the strategy going in was try to run a big first day and a half, right, and then try and get some sleep then, and then, you know, roll on from there, push for 48 and 6-day records if you could, but the 6-day was the main focus. But fairly early on in the process, albeit you still ran over 100 miles, you changed tactics, right?
Oh my God, yeah, the strategy. I think in hindsight, my strategy was exactly the same sort of strategy that we always, almost, you know, when people first start running their first 24-hour race and they're like, it'd be easy, I'm just going to run 10 kilometres an hour and then I'll be able to do 240 kilometres. And people don't respect the race. I think I made exactly the same mistake. Well, I know I made exactly the same mistake at the start of that 6-day. I'll just be all right. I'll run 10K an hour and I can do 160 miles and maybe I can do 240 kilometers on the first day. And I looked at it and it all looked too easy. And I had these ideas of, trying to get close to the 48-hour record in the first 2 days and then go on and try and get close to that 6-day record. But oh my gosh, that first day was, oh man, it was so hard. I don't know why, but it was I was like, after 6 or 7 hours I was like, there's no way I can carry on for like another 5 and whatever days. My legs were so tight, so stiff, like hurting loads. It was just it was really, really tough that first day. So
the first day you covered what? It was a little over 100 miles before you hit the sack, right, the first time?
Yeah, like I mean Charlotte will tell you I was like faffmeister. I was just really faffing, like my legs hurt, and I was stopping quite a lot, and then I was saying to Charlotte, like, I was saying, like, I'm really tired, maybe I'll just have a little sleep, and I think I did stop when I was like, I closed my eyes for like an hour or something, and it was just, yeah, I don't know what I covered. Maybe I did 200K on the first day. I don't know.
Where are you at mentally then, given that you've got 5 days of this to come? Where are you at the end of that first day thinking, you know, you're just in the moment, like completely disregarding the rest of the race and just focusing on one lap at a time? Or are you daunted by, you know, what's to come?
Yeah, I was proper. Yeah, I wasn't feeling good at all. And I just kept on thinking, man, I've run quite a few 24-hour races, and I've never, like, if this was just a single one-off 24-hour race, it's probably the worst I've ever felt in a 24-hour race. And I'm like scraping just over 200 kilometers, which would be like the worst 24-hour race I've ever run. And I'm like, yeah, and I should be feeling fresh. I've got so, you know, I'm running well within myself in 24 hours, and I'm not, I've got 5 days to come. And I was just, I was a little bit daunted by it. But that's why I think I convinced Charlotte that it'd be good to have a rest, because like, I've got so many days to come. So, and I felt like I was just beating myself up out there and just, I was just doing more damage to myself. So that's why I think we agreed to try and, well, no, I don't know if we agreed. I just convinced Charlotte that I needed to have more rest on that first day.
I was very pleased that the conversation on day two was, basically what happened was Charlotte was crewing you and Richard, and then at home, Robbie and I were on the WhatsApp group with Charlotte, just trying to discuss various things, because obviously in the crewing situation where she's intensively looking after two of you for 6 days and not getting much rest herself, it's easy to get brain fuzz and not really be able to make decisions or give you calculations or targets or any of that stuff. On the second day, you know, we asked, is it 48 hours still on, or is it now about the 6th day? And she said, oh no, definitely we're going for 6 days. And I think that was immediately sort of a relief that you were going to sort of just relax a bit, if that's possible, in a 6 day race and just focus on doing as much as you could each day without the pressure of setting these huge, you know, interim targets. But one thing that was surprising was that you weren't in the lead from relatively early on. Italian guy, I can't remember his name now. Marchese.
Tizano Marchese.
He was really putting out there, right?
He was, yeah. But the weird thing about those races that I always find, I don't know if you find it on 24-hour, is your position, right? You know your position in the race. You kind of know you're in third place.
How do you know that? Is there a board that you're looking at?
In second. There's a board, yeah. So every now and again, every like hour or so, I'll just stop and have a quick look at the board. And actually, the good thing about that race is sometimes on those looped races is the board's like right in front of you. So you literally every lap, you have to turn your eyes or close your eyes and don't look at it. And sometimes you can just, you're just watching it and the time seems to stand still. You never really... you never really build any kilometres. So that was quite good. I could just, sometimes I'd say to myself, right, it'd be like a little treat. I'm going to run 4 hours and then I'll look at the board sort of thing. So, because you had to go into a little tent and have a look at it. So I knew who was around me. But thing was, I didn't really, people are wearing their race numbers, but they've got so many, it's 6 days, you've got so many other clothes you're putting on and stuff, so you don't really see, it's really hard to see people's race numbers, and most of the time they're on the front as well, so you don't see them when you go past. So I'd know that there was an Italian in front of me, and I'd know that there was a Swedish dude around somewhere who was But I didn't actually know who they were in the race. It took me until like the fourth day to actually know who these runners were. Like every now and again, I'd say to Charlotte, like, can you try and work out who number 63 is or number 49 is for us? And Charlotte wouldn't know either. Like, you think that it's such a long race and it's quite intimate and you're only on under 1 kilometer loop that you would kind of know who you were racing against. But yeah, it did take about 4 days until I was chasing the wrong geezer for a while. The wrong, like, thinking that some of this Spanish dude was the Italian dude. That for about a day and a half, I was convinced that he was the one that was in the lead, and he was probably in, like, I don't know, like 40th place or something. It was it's really hard to tell. And I think when you're like running about the same sort of pace as well, you don't often, you can get stuck for hours and hours of not really seeing people, you know. So yeah, so there was this chat in the lead, but it took me a while to find out, yeah, to actually find out which one he was.
There was a lot of people there though. I was really surprised at how many entrants there were. It was a big number. I mean, well over 150 on a small loop like that. There's a lot. So I guess it shows that the event is fairly prestigious and well organised. Obviously, people going for a raft of records, from national 48-hour, 6-day to age group records and everything in between. And then Marchese obviously was about sort of, he seemed to gap you by about 50k over the first few days. And then Charlotte's reports where he just doesn't seem to be sleeping. He just seems to be going round and round. He'd stop for like 10 minutes while you were off the track for 2, 3, 4 hours. And then you were running so much faster than him. But he was holding the gap because while he was, you know, resting less, he was just clocking away, you know, more and more laps. So you were
He was amazing. Like, when I did actually find out who he was, yeah, I ran with him for a bit and he was really cool. He was really helpful in a way. He was like, maybe, I don't know, I saw it as genuinely trying to help me, but then he might have been trying to slow me down as well. But at one point, he kind of like, I didn't speak in Italian, he didn't speak in English, but he tried to show me. He was like, don't run all the time. You're just gonna knock yourself out.
I think that's wrong. I had that. We had the same thing in Athens where you tried the 48 and I did the 24. I remember this Greek guy who was competitive and telling me and Alexander, the Lithuanian, stop running, slow down, stop running. You know, this isn't a race. Like, and I was like, it made me doubt what I was doing. And actually, I think it was a tactic to try and get us to back off, because he ended up on 200-something K, and he was obviously not happy that he was getting lapped over and over and over again.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. He literally held my hand for, I was running alongside him, and then he held my hand and said, like, watch what I do. And he was running, he'd run a bit, like there was a slight downhill bit, he'd run the downhill bit, then he'd walk for a bit, then he'd run again, then he'd walk for a tiny bit, then he'd run again, and he had this whole, like, this way he kind of got around the lap, which was like, he'd have like 3 really short, like, walking breaks in the lap, and then he'd run the rest of it, basically. So, and he actually did. So I stayed with him for like a few hours, and I was doing what he was doing, because I was really interested to know, like, I wanted to get an idea of what he was eating, what he was drinking.
Is he an experienced 6-day runner? Has he done well at these things before, or is he new to 6-day? I mean, it sounds like he's really experienced, and then...
Yeah, I couldn't work it out. I have to have a look, actually. I think sometimes he was saying he had done them before, and sometimes, but it actually... We were just chatting. Well, when we're talking to each other, we were just, we weren't making any, we weren't listening to what each of us were saying. We didn't understand each other at all. But I think it might have been his first one. Yeah. He's run quite a few 48 hours. And,
okay.
But yeah, but he seemed to have that strategy. strategy, but it was just amazing because he was so strong, and he was like, he just wasn't like, I'd proper go to bed. The French runners were like really having a giggle at me because they were like, what are you doing? You're like, why are you sleeping so much? Like, you do you want to win this race? And,
right.
And they were like, you're just, we never know anyone sleep so much in a 6 day race. And
right.
And I was quicker than him, the Italian dude, when we were out on the course, like definitely, and I'd lap him. And by the end of a day, like a day's work for me, from like sort of 4 a.m. till 12 p.m. or something, I'd have caught up on him. And sometimes I'd have got quite close, like maybe within 15k of him, and then I'd go back into the little caravan, and then come back out 4 hours later, and he'd be like, yeah, 40k ahead again because he hadn't been to bed. And he was just mental.
Let me read you this, right? Richard McChesney posted on our community page during the race. He was following it, and he's a really good, I think he's New Zealand record holder of some kind over either 48 hours or 6 days or maybe both. He said, I've just done some analysis of the lap times of Dan and the guy who's leading, which is Marchese, the Italian. Dan has 6 laps of 908 that have taken more 908 meters that have taken more than an hour. Two of those were 1 hour and 43 and 1 hour 23 respectively, and the other 4 were between 4:14 and 5:35. So you were off the track for between 4 and 6 hours 4 times for a total of 23 hours. The guy who's leading has had 8 laps of longer than an hour, but the longest was only 2 hours and 7, and the 8 breaks added up to only 12 hours 20. So you're effectively off the track for 11 hours more than him during the first 5 days. On a speed basis, Dan's last 6 laps have averaged 6:58, and the other guy 9 minutes 12. So there was a massive gulf in a running speed, and you know, while you were active, it's just that you managed to get a lot more sleep in. But were you actually sleeping, or were you just off the track?
I wasn't sleeping at all. It seems weird that time just, I'm sure some of them aren't right. So I came out one night and saw that one lap was 5.5 hours, and I'd only been off the track for like, it was more like 3.5 or something. It was weird, that one. Okay. Anyway. But I'd stop, and there's a couple of times I had a shower, try and make myself feel better, and then I'd try and sleep. But oh my god, just it was the same on that joggle. I mean, I don't know. I was so, my legs, as soon as I stopped, I'd have like a 10-minute, 15-minute window, and my legs felt all right, and then they just start. They'd just be so painful that I wouldn't be able to find a position to sleep in. And the beds we had we were in like these tiny little caravans, and me and Charlotte had these two like single beds, basically, normally be like someone's like fourth bathroom in their house. I mean, the one where there's just a toilet, and you can't even you can't get in the door and shut it, and I don't know. Yeah. So it wasn't much room for that kind of finding the right position. So I spent basically, I kind of lay down for like an hour and a half, like complaining and like, oh, my legs are so much, like that. And maybe we'd fall asleep for 10 minutes or 10 or 15 minutes or something, and then have to get up and and get back out onto the track. So I wasn't really sleeping that much, but maybe just the fact, I don't know, you know, when you lie down, you get that kind of lucid, you're kind of like in a dream state, but you're awake, and you're, so there's a lot of stuff like that, which I think probably is as good as sleep. Do you know what I mean? Just for the mind, maybe.
Yeah.
Your body doesn't get that much rest, but just that kind of switching off of the mind, which helped. Yeah. But yeah, it does seem like I was asleep for a long time, didn't it?
you were definitely, I mean, you know, your knee and your ankle seemed to be quite badly swollen. I mean, Charlotte was saying that you were struggling to get shoes on. You know, I don't know if you ended up cutting your shoes and stuff, but what injury wise or, you know, issue wise physically was like breaking down the most?
Yeah, I at one point, after about 3 days, there's a couple of times in 24-hour races when I've had to stop. One time in Belfast when I have this like a bursitis on the inside of my knee, and that started to hurt at one point. Maybe I don't know whether it was like 2 days or 3 days, it started to hurt, and it was like it was becoming a bit of an issue, like it was really painful. And and I went to see, there was a massage person, I went to see them and they gave me a massage, and then it got a bit better. But that was a good moment, that, because for me mentally, like, that started to hurt, and it was after 3 days. And sometimes if you're like not strong mentally at that point, and you've got an old injury that's coming back and it's hurting, and each time you lift your foot up it's getting worse, then that's quite a good out shot, isn't it? It's like a reason to quit the race, you know. It's a reason there's something, this is real, do you know what I mean? And I was when that happened, I was like, oh, there's no way I want to, that really was that strong, like, there's no way I want to quit this. I've got to get to the finish of this race. I'm going to get through this. I'm not going to let this injury, which was quite, I don't know, it was quite
satisfying to know that you could go there.
Yeah, it was a good position to be in, because I could have quite easily have just thought, this is an excuse and I can just sit around and, I can finish now. So that's all right. And my ankle was it was quite swelled up, and like I couldn't really move it. It was kind of stuck, you know. I couldn't move my foot up and down, but it didn't seem to problem when I was running. So that wasn't, it was okay. Yeah.
That's sort of amazing. And by the way, I've just looked at Marchese. He's got a 24-hour PB of 2:46, which is solid. The 48-hour PB of 4:13, which is... I think that would be almost a British record if he'd run that, you know, in the UK, and is an Italian record. And that is from 2011. He's broken 400K three separate times by the look of it. So he is an experienced guy, and obviously those tactics. So as the race wore on, you made it through to the final day, and it ended up being... the last day for you kind of started on the... second to last night, really. You seem to forge, despite all of the trials and tribulations, forge out the last almost 36 hours non-stop, didn't you?
Yeah, pretty much. I think so. I was getting up, like we started at 12 in midday, didn't we? So, but I was kind of resting and then getting up at like 4 in the morning and then starting running again. So I think the same sort of thing happened. I got up at like 4-ish. So then there was, 32 hours or something to go, maybe. Wow. Eight more hours, 32 hours. And, actually, me and Charlotte, we forgot to set the alarm. And I actually fell asleep on that last night that I slept.
Right.
And so it was the first time I had that proper sleep. But I woke up and I was like, jeez, man, I've overslept. And I was like, I was really panicked and like, oh my god, I can't believe it. So quickly, like within like 2 minutes, I was out running, got my stuff on, quickly got out onto the course, but first of all just quickly checked the the standings on and we could see that Marchese was 70 he was 71 kilometers ahead of me.
Oh my god.
But that wasn't bothering me, because really I wasn't bothered. I really wasn't thinking about first place at all. He was so far ahead that I just wasn't. It was all right. He's 71 kilometers ahead, but I was more looking like at second and third. And they were like 14 kilometers behind me or something like that, or 10 kilometers behind me. So I was like, all right, that's all right. I haven't caught up. I've had a sleep and I haven't caught up. So then, I just got out there for that. The end of the fifth day, and then I suppose into the start of the sixth day. But when I started running, Charlotte was in bed for a bit, and then when Charlotte got up, I must have been feeling quite good, because I was been having these thoughts in my head. I was trying to do like calculations. I was thinking, do you know what? If I just, yeah, I feel all right. I was thinking, if I just try and run like a, not a fast, but a reason, you know, a 16-hour 100-mile or something, you know what I mean? Would I be able to catch, you know?
A 16-hour 100 at that point, though. I mean, that's like 9:40, but that's huge.
I was only thinking that in my head. Right. You know what I mean? Like, it's a big difference. But it just, I was just thinking, yeah, would I be able to catch him? You know, could I, you know, would it, blah, blah. And I think that's when Charlotte got up. I said to Charlotte, I was like, oh, can you ask like James or Robbie to just do some maths and see how,
yeah,
like what I'd have to do to catch him. And I think that's
well, we at that point were like, he needs to run 2K an hour faster, so it's not really, you know, we said the same thing as you were feeling, don't chase him, because that is such a demoralizing thing to say, oh yeah, you need to run 2K an hour more than him at that point. That we decided to just frame it differently. And we emailed Andy Milroy, who's kind of the record keeper for all of the ultra distance records in the UK and internationally. And he was amazing. Came straight back with the all-time British list, road, indoor and track. And, you know, gave us the next marks that, you know, you could aim for to put, you know, into, you know, British road record and then chasing each, you know, number down in the list. So Charlotte could at least say to you, another 5K and you'll be fifth on the all-time list, then fourth, then third. And that seemed to, I guess the pressure being off in a way, because he was so far ahead, kind of helped, because you then just started clocking it off and you were catching him by 2K an hour, even slightly more.
I was starting to really enjoy the running and getting quite excited, because for me, I was just watching Tizzano. I was watching Marchese, the Italian, and I was getting quite excited by it. I think, oh man, I could catch him. Although Charlotte was giving me these numbers, I was just thinking that. And I think one thing that both you and Robbie said was just go. Like, just keep like steadily going past him, just keep lapping him. Yeah. And when you do lap him, like, just, you know, give him a thumbs up and, you know,
do it with authority.
Do it, man, yeah. Like a little tap on the back. And so, yeah, I purposely upped my lap. Well, I started running faster just so I could lap him more and more. And I said to, I said to Charlotte, let's just see whether he responds to it and see how, you know, how tough he is, because he is super, super tough. And so did that, and him, you could see, like, he's still like 60K ahead of me or something, but him and his coach were like getting worried and like looking at my lap times. His
and you're
coach
loving
always,
this now, right? You're feeling like this, but you're on the upward swing here.
Yeah, and all of it, I think more I'm loving it, because all of a sudden, rather than just, I mean, I did, don't get me wrong, really, I did enjoy the race from day two. I did really start to enjoy it. But all of a sudden, there's like a different element to the race. It's coming, it's like the last day. Yeah. It's getting a bit more exciting, do you know what I mean? I've just got something else to think about rather than just going round and round and round, you know?
Yeah, and you're starting, I know it's a ridiculous amount of time still to go, but you're actually starting to feel like your race. So that must have been really exciting, like the prospect of having a race at the end. Of course, everyone at home's looking at you closing Marchese down, and you know, just seemed, it was really exciting.
He responded. Yeah, his run walk went out the window. He started running. He started. Yeah. I was still passing him, but it became, you know, I was still quicker than him, but I wasn't quick enough. He got to the point where I wouldn't have been quick enough to like catch up with him.
Yeah.
And I was like to Charlotte, I was like, yeah, this geezer, he's nails, man. Because he hasn't slept. I've pushed him for 2 hours. I've really pushed him, and he's totally responded. And he's upped his game, and he's now lapping a lot quicker. And so then I kind of just slowed down a bit, and I made a point of like, I stopped for like 30 seconds and in my, well, I don't have any Italian at all, but I made some hand gestures and I was like saying to his coach, man, this geezer's like Superman. He's just so strong. And I said the same to Marchese, you know what I mean? Lots of times I was like, man, you're just, yeah, you are so strong, so strong. And it just, yeah, it carried on like that for like a couple more hours when he upped it a bit and we were just kind of, and then, yeah, going at the same speed, I suppose. And then, but then, I don't know what happened, but he started to, things started to go a little bit wrong for him, I think, yeah.
Yeah.
And then maybe, like, I don't know, when you look at the race afterwards, maybe that couple of hours, just he just pushed it.
Yeah.
He just pushed it too much.
Yeah.
And then it just got, yeah, he just went over his line a little bit because then he stopped. He stopped for a bit and then he came back out and then he stopped. And this was like unheard of, you know, he hadn't been stopping at all, you know. And I think this is how long ago now? Oh, man, yeah, I don't know.
It's the last day, really, right? Yeah, the last like, it's half
probably
a day.
Like 14 hours to go, maybe 14, 15 hours, or towards like the last evening, you know, it's starting to get dark, that sort of time, yeah.
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 It's mental how slowly, like this sounds like an exciting race, and how slowly it's still unfolding, like hour after hour after hour, just grinding down. Yeah, you know, Marchese's grinding down. You're seeming to be able to sustain what you're doing, and winding it in until you. At this point as well, you're closing in on the 900k mark, both of you, which is a massive, massive number. You know, huge landmark. And you kind of had a chat to him, right? That you agreed to kind of cross together, or you wanted to cross that mark together?
Yeah, like a little bit late. Yeah, later on. Yeah, like so through the night, it was a bit weird actually. So Charlotte went to bed. Richard was in bed.
Yeah.
And obviously you and Robs were in. Like, I had no contact of anyone for like about five hours or so in the middle of the night, and I was like proper. Proper like raggy, like sleep deprivation, you know. Maybe I've been out there for maybe it was only like 20, maybe coming up to 24 hours I've been out there, that sleep deprivation catching up with me. I had this playlist, the only thing I've been able to download, which was like 1,000 slow rock anthems or something that I was listening to for some, and it was like catapulted with me into some like weird, I don't know, slow rock reality. I was a bit out of it, but I still felt quite good. But I was, it'd be interesting to look at my splits for that middle of the night. I was just being an absolute galah. I was like, I'd just really responsive to anything. So I'd run past someone and someone would say, "Oh, you're catching him. You're going to be able to catch him. The Italian, you're going to be able to catch him." So then I'd run like stupid fast for that time of the day, night, or the race or whatever, and I'd for like, I don't know, 4 minutes or something, and then realize, what am I doing? Like, I'm just nailing myself here. So then I'd slow down.
You were clocking some laps that were between 4:40 and 5 minutes a lap, which,
yeah,
you know, is just under a kilometer, is unbelievable pace. But this is what you did at Joggle, you know, when I showed up on day 6 and you were just cranking the running pace out still. That is your greatest asset, you know, that you can still find the legs to be able to run really well, like fast at that juncture. And yeah, it probably did bury you somewhat, but guess what? It worked out in the end, right? So what happened then in the final stages?
Charlotte got up at some point and I was like, Charlotte, no. So how close is he? How close am I to him? Blah, blah, blah. I was like, I was on the edge. I can't remember what I was saying to him. Like barking out all these orders. Oh, can you just get it? And it was like, I don't know how many hours, left, maybe like 7 hours left or something. And I don't know what happened, but then I slowed right down again. And we were getting close to 900 kilometres, and I slowed right down again. And I didn't have. And then Charlotte at one point was like, oh, why don't you just get in front of him before 900. And I was like, what, can I do that really? And she was like, yeah, he's only 6K ahead or something. So then in my head, I was like, right, yeah, that's brilliant. He's really helped me out. Well, my plan now is to catch up with him for 900, to get to 900 kilometers. And then I want to go across the line with him for the 900 kilometers. So that was my plan. So then I ran like, yeah, I seem to have like a real burst of energy, and for like 45 minutes, 50 minutes, maybe an hour, like just ran. Yeah, just started just absolutely having it around. It was just around the course, and was just lapping him almost every lap and a half, every two laps or something. And then got to a point where I thought we were level, and we could go over the road together or the line together, but then actually I'd gone ahead of him, which I didn't realize. And anyway, I caught back up with him, and then that was what happened. As I caught back up with him, I found him, he just stopped, and he was kind of like lying on the pavement, or like not too far from his little caravan, complaining about his leg. So I stopped and I helped him back to his caravan, and then explained to his coach that I wanted to cross the line, the 900 line, together with him. Through that Google Translate on the phones, which was quite tricky, we managed to get that across. So
right now we've got four or five hours to go, and it's quite obvious to all of us watching that you've basically caught him up, and that he's done, and that you're going to go on and win the race. That's the way it seemed. Did it seem that way there? Do you think he was responding to that?
Yeah, it was an absolute, like, it was just, I can see from the outside, like, people like Richard, who was like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And other people, there was one chap, he's a friend of yours, he does the sweeping at your races, Garfield lovely, lovely man. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
He was saying to me, like, the same sort of thing, like, what are you doing? Just like, just overtake him, just go and just win the race. I was like, all that sleep deprived. And, oh no, it's not about winning. I want to go over the line with him. I want to do this. And actually, I had to wait. I probably had to wait like 45 minutes to go across the line with him, because he went in for a massage, and I sat with him as he had his massage. And then he eventually came out of the massage, and then we walked around, like, I don't know, his penultimate lap, and then he realised that I was one lap ahead. So I went round backwards. I went round like a lap backwards and met him at the other bit, and then walked round the last lap with him. And and then eventually we went over the mark together.
And now Charlotte's starting at Instagram Live stuff, and we're actually able to see what's going on. And everyone at home's like, just go, Dan, just go. You can win the race. And then like, Marchese, come on, man, come on. And he didn't really want that, right? He said to you then, I'm going to stop, that's it. And that's not what happened, right?
Yeah, well, I think it was like massively, Google Translate wasn't great, and there was so many different people saying different things.
Yeah, sure.
So there was like so many things. Like, I'd got to 900 kilometres really happy, and like, sometimes your mind at the end of, there's 4 or 5 hours left, but your mind's like, 900 kilometers, yeah, just stop there, mate. It's all right. God, you've done it. It's good. You put in a good stint. You know what I mean? You can put your feet up now, come out for the last hour and that walk around with everyone else. And, but then there was, originally I was going to walk the last 4 hours with him, and we finished together on the same whatever. And then, at the start, I was saying, oh, I'm just done, 900 kilometres is fine, you know, it doesn't matter.
Right.
And then he was injured, and he was like, no, you're stronger, you go on and finish, and I'm going to stop now. And then Richard started chatting to him, and I don't know what was happening, but basically I was under the impression that we're going to walk around one more time. Marchese was going to stop. I could then like have like maybe half an hour to have something to eat.
Because at this point you've been awake and running for about 28 hours already, right?
Yeah. So I was up for a little bit of a I hadn't come in at all. I hadn't stopped at all. Yeah, like even for like a 5 minute power nap or anything. So yeah, I was like, I'll just sit back, maybe, you know, yeah, have something to eat, put my feet up, give Charlotte to kind of move my ankle a bit, and then just, you know, then I'll get out there and I'll go and like spend time with the other British runners. I'll walk with like Stephen or John or David and spend time with Richard or Garfield. So that was my plan. So I did, that started to happen. I went back into the hut, changed my clothes into some dry clothes and almost like non-running clothes, like a hoodie, and because I thought I was going to do some walking.
Yeah.
And then Charlotte was like, "Oh, he's still out there. Marchese's still out there." And I was like, no, he said he's going to stop. And she's like, no, he's still out there. He's come past a few times. And I was like, what? He said he's going to stop. I was like, oh, fuck. Fuck's sake. I was like, oh, man.
So Charlotte's telling us, she goes, he's really not happy. And I was like, I'm not surprised. Yeah, because now you're like, right, I've got to run again.
Yeah, I was so angry. I was so, oh, my God, it was like really raining. I had like dry clothes on. I was just like, I can't believe it. So then I just went, luckily, I don't know where it came from, because I was still, I mean, legs were pretty battered. But then luckily I was like, oh man, I'm just gonna go. So I just went out for an hour and again ran, like, you know, reasonably well in the context of the race, reasonably fast for an hour, and just lapped him maybe, I don't know, five times or something. And just so I knew that he, like, get into a position where he couldn't, because he was walking at this point, you know, like he couldn't overtake me. But I was so angry in that last those last few hours, and it really, I mean, it was just silly. I just get a bit emotional, don't you, and you're like emotions all over the place. But it was just, yeah. And I lapped him a few times, then I walked with a few of the British runners for a little bit, and then it was just, I mean, the rain got like worse and worse. And I was just so, I was so over that last kind of half an hour, you know, like when we're just walking around aimlessly.
So this time you've gapped him by like 3 or 4K, and it's obvious then that he's not going to unlap you by that much, and that you are actually going to win the race. Which, I mean, the main thing for me there was just how brilliantly you'd actually manage yourself over 6 days, given how you felt on day one, given the lead this guy had with 32 hours to go, the effort that you must have put in over that time, mentally and physically, over the last day and a half, let alone the 4.5 before that. It's just mind-boggling. I think
I got lucky, man. I did not, in a way that, like, the first few days were really hard, but I think now from doing the joggle as well, I think that's just normal. And I think when I run another one,
it's normal for you, but it's not normal for everyone else. And this is why I keep saying that I don't want to.
It's almost like how I can work it out. And the same thing sometimes happens in that 24s. Is the first 2 days were just, they were hard, hard work. And it was almost like a reaction from it's almost like a test from your body. Like, I'm going to make these first 2 days for you, like, really hard, because we don't want to be doing this, you know, we don't want to be running for 6 days, you know, let's make it hard, see if we can like knock you off and stop you running. But you get to a certain point, like after a day and a half, 2 days, when your body just resigns itself to the fact that, all right, this is what's happening now. So, and everything, it's almost like a flick of a switch, and everything just becomes, after those 2 days, becomes so much easier than it was, you know.
Yeah, mentally, yeah. And this is what the transcon runners always say, right? And they usually say after a week, it's that you're in the routine, your body and your mind are sort of in synergy now. They know it's got to happen. And almost if you get through 2 days, you get through the week, you get through the whole thing, doesn't matter what's ahead.
It's even to the point where you don't even need to put, this is what I find as well. So go out for a long run, any time, you know, anything over like 3 or 4 hours, and I need to like lube up, I need to put like Vaseline on or whatever on. Yeah. But it's even up to the point that, like, after those 2 days when your body kind of says, all right, yeah, this is what's happening, you don't even that chafe anywhere. You don't need to put Vaseline or anything on. It's almost like it's weird. Like, you're just, yeah, your body's
adapting to the conditions. Yeah. Yeah. I guess that's an ancient thing, right? From when, you know, harking back to what we needed to do as a species to survive, to catch food, to just be able to go for days and days and days at that endurance level. What I've been trying to say for the last 10 minutes is try and make you feel good about yourself. I think what people don't really understand, and it was very interesting chatting with Robbie after your trip across Jordan. He was quite annoyed that you just seemed to be able to run at that very substantial pace. You know, like the 530 kilometer range per hour range, almost on autopilot. And it's a pace that other people just simply can't replicate. You know, decent runners, Marchese is, you know, 6 day now national record holder and 48 hour national record holder and what have you. He was absolutely miles off the running pace you can sustain, but you're also able to deliver it mentally to match that physical ability. And that's why you're, in my opinion, breaking records and capable of, you know, going so much further. This was an amazing first attempt. It was so far off what you'd probably hoped for, and it had derailed almost in the first day to the point where it just wasn't. It was obviously not going to happen for the 48, and even the 6 day seemed a massive stretch a day in, and yet you raced it to the last hour and won the race by 6K. 920k, 919k, a new British road record. You know, and you spent over a day off the track trying to sleep.
That's ridiculous, isn't it? Over a day. What am I doing? Basically, I ran a 5 day race.
I mean, imagine terrible. If you can just like that. Refine that sleep pattern down. And optimize. I think the key thing is being able to come in, like the hero are doing it. It's really Johan Steiner, right? Where he's running these backyard ultras. He's coming in, he's sitting in his chair, he's immediately falling asleep for 5 minutes, waking up and then getting going again.
I think that's the way to do it. Like I say, I think it's only when I stop for a certain amount of time that then my legs start to really hurt. And I think if I can just come in and, which I did on a couple of occasions back during the week, was just come in, quickly get my, Charlotte would like kind of loosen up my legs a little bit. And as she was doing that, I'd drift off for like 5 or 10 minutes and then push, then you'd be, ready to go back again, which I think maybe is the way to do it. Yeah. Looking at it, trying to get proper night's sleep or something akin to a proper night's sleep just doesn't work. It's just not the way to do it. So next time,
there will be a next time. Where does this leave you, look, I know it's really really soon after it still, but looking ahead at either the 6 day format or joggle again, where does it leave you in terms of thinking ahead to big plans?
I really enjoyed it, it was a real I know I'd like to do the job again, and I'd like to do one of these 6 day races again. It was just, I had such fun, apart from those first 2 days, but I was actually waking up and like, looking forward to getting back out on that loop, which is quite weird. And that coming towards the end of the race as well, I was a little bit apprehensive about like going back into real life, because we just, it's 6 days on that track, and like I hadn't even come off the track to go onto the like the inside bit where the grass was and stuff, really? And it just felt like half of me was like really happy to finish, but half of me was like, whoa.
What was the accommodation then? It looked like to be sort of like a mobile home on the course.
Yeah, it's like a trailer park, and which was cool because we're just running around a trailer park thing, but all of the runners were right on the course. So each runner's got a mix of them in different kind of caravans. So it's nice where you're kind of that constant support on the way around as well. And you just, it's just really funny watching all the, it's the same with the runners, but watching all the support crew as you come around, just like hour after hour, day after day, that just looking just just looking so tired. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. There's this one Czech dude, this like old Czech dude, and like the bags under his eyes were just just ridiculous towards the end of the end of the race. He's like a big, like droopy, what they call that, like bulldog or something at the end of the race. And it was just, yeah, it was just cool. It's such a nice community of, you know, it's like a new community. It's a different type of runner that are at these events. And what I really liked as well is there's none of that all the gear, no idea going on. Everyone is just in, it's like everyone's gone to Beyond Retro to the vintage shop and bought all their running gear like a day before. It's just, everyone is just in, you know, there's some brilliant outfits out there with just like real old school running gear, like finishers t-shirts from 1982. And love, you know, it. What I mean, it's just
that is amazing.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Yeah.
So it was everything you wanted it to be. It was a really good experience overall. And does it make you think now, because Eleanor Robinson was saying beforehand that what she noticed going up to 6 day and 1,000 mile races is that coming back down to 24 just seems so much easier. Is that something you can sort of feel as you look ahead? Is there less sort of daunting ahead with the, you know, Albi 24 hour champs?
Yeah. You know? Let's see. I don't know until all I was thinking on that first day was, oh my God, I'll never, because it was so hard that first day. I was like, oh, I never want to run a 24 hour again. This is just, this is just hideous. But yeah, hopefully that might happen. Who knows? Yeah. I mean, it feels in my mind like I can give it more in a 24 hour, knowing that it's only 24, and it feels like in my mind that I can be stronger at the end of a 24 hour. But yeah, that's just in my mind at the moment. Let's see if we can put that into a performance as well. Yeah.
What doesn't come across really is just what you had to go through physically and mentally to get the job done. Because as usual, you sort of take it in your stride and you accept it all for what it is, the pain, the misery, the boredom. You're able to sort of transcend it in a way and just get the job done. But really, you know, it is staggering, really, just to think about it. It's certainly, Robbie's going to me, do you fancy this? And I'm like, no, I really do not fancy it.
No, I think you should do that. I think it's, like I say, I think it's, you know, when people complain about, like, oh, when you speak to someone who doesn't really run and they're like, oh, I find it so hard, that first, oh, you know, the first kilometer, or I can't get going, the first 10 minutes is so hard, I end up stopping. It was just kind of that last, when the body just kind of lets everything go for those last few days, you know what I mean?
It just almost felt relax.
Like it was, like it was, I don't know, like it was easier in a way, I don't know, it didn't feel, I mean, one good way of like kind of assessing that in a 6 day race is, like, there was a few people that dropped out, but I can't think of anyone that dropped out in that race after the second day.
I did notice, you know? That
like once you're in that second day, that's it, you're kind of you're in it for the whole thing, which is different to other races, isn't it? You know, you get quite a few dropouts like in 24 hours, like the people are dropping out all the way. But yeah, and I was saying to Charlotte, they were saying, because sometimes you're waiting around for people, you know, the second, third place chaps getting closer to me, the second, and you're waiting around for them to kind of like fall and drop out, and it just didn't happen. Everyone was just, after that second day, most people were pretty consistent with their times and with their, you know, which I think goes to show that it's that, I don't know, maybe it is just easier those last 4 days.
While we're on the race still, Richard Brown, who is a legend in his own right, was going for the British Male Vet 70 record, which I believe he achieved with a long period of time still to go in the race. Is that correct?
Yeah. So Richard was phenomenal. He managed the 70 plus 48 hour record. and then went on to completely, well, so he smashed both of them, but completely smashed the 70 plus 6 day record by, I think, over 100 kilometers. Yeah.
Okay.
You know, he was absolutely smashing it, and he really impressing me. Like at some points, me and Rich were like, I wouldn't see him for a long, long time, which shows that our pace wasn't that dissimilar. Do you know what I mean? He was moving along really well at times, and it was really good actually to actually one. He made a big difference. I think maybe when I was struggling a bit on that kind of after a day and a half, I hadn't gone past him for a while, which showed that I was slow, or I was faffing more, I was stopping more. And when I went past him, we'd been out for about 3 or 4 hours. When I went past him, he said like, he had a go at me. He was like, what are you doing? You're here to do a job. Stop effing around or something. And he said that to me. He was like, you haven't passed me in hours. And he said that to me, and I was like, oh, that made me a bit like, oh, well, I'll freaking show you. Well, I'm going to lap you like, I don't know, I'll try and lap you like 6 times in the next hour or something. And that really, that was it. Yeah, it was a turning point.
That's interesting that you responded that way, because I would have thought you'd have been the opposite. But he's done that before to you, right, isn't it? Spartathlon, where he's like, for God's sake, Dan, you know, go on and win the race. Yeah. Stop messing around. The thing is, and I felt this with Richard in the past.
It just resonated. He was right. I was faffing around.
Yeah, he is right. I mean, but at the time, yeah, it comes across quite aggressive. Like, he stands at the corner on a 24-hour race, 22 hours in, going, come on. And you sort of think, Richard, yeah, I've been running for 22 hours as fast as I can. I'm absolutely broken. And you're just shouting at me. It's not helpful. And yet, somehow, it does push you on in the right way. That's experience for you. So what is your next race? Is it Albi, or are you going to try and maybe do some other stuff in between now and the end of October?
Next probably big race, is I'll just start working towards Albi. I've got a few other little races, and I've got a few like 12-hour races that we'll be at in England with Rerun, and like a 24 down in Cornwall with the Mud Crew people.
That looks miserable.
It does,
up and down the stairs basically for 24 hours.
Up and down steps for 24 hours. But then a few weeks after that, I'm on that Monte Rosa race. So hopefully that will smash my quads enough to make that more enjoyable. And then it's Albi, yeah. So, and then you're coming out to Albi as well. Yeah, good news, no?
I shall be there. I should be supporting you in every capacity. It was funny on the WhatsApp group. I joined and immediately copped abuse from almost everybody on the team.
This is the first time. Yeah. Everyone's so like.
And then John said, it's good to see you've all respect like one another.
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah. Yeah. Everyone's so kind to each other and says exactly the right things when you come on, and everyone's just absolutely slating you.
The best one was Mick. It was like, I can't remember what he said, something along the lines of he spends more time in the tent than he does on the track anyway. So that is quality. So I'm looking forward to that. I'll be around to help with whatever you need help with. Try and support the team. And what an amazing team it is. Everyone can get to start line fit and in shape. So, that's it. We've been prattling on for an hour now.
Cool.
About a 6 day race. Yeah. Who would have thought it? I know people were following your story and really following the race online, because it's so unusual for a 6 day race to kind of feature in people's, you know, daily life, or as part of the, I mean, most people wouldn't have even been aware of that race or even necessarily that format beforehand, but you really got people up for it and interested. And long may that continue, because as a format, it's got so much history.
Steeped in history, isn't it? Yeah.
And it would be, it will continue to make a comeback. I mean, for me, the low-hanging fruit, if there is such a thing, is still the British men's 48-hour record. We'll leave it there for now. I guess we'll see after the next few weeks what the next episode might bring. It's Comrades, it's South Downs Way 100, it's numerous things. The thing I'm excited about in the immediate future is John Kelly's Grand Round, which we're going up to help with this week, where he's attempting to run the Paddy Buckley, cycle to the Bob Graham, run the Bob Graham, cycle to the Charlie Ramsay in Scotland, and run that all within the space of 100 hours.
Within 100? It's amazing, yeah, man.
Well, yeah. I mean, everyone's swaying between this is so ridiculous, there's no way to this guy. If anyone can do it, it's John. And how can you doubt a guy who's finished Barclay? He's also an extremely, extremely good Ironman distance triathlete. You know, sub 9 hours, he's finished right up there at Kona. So if anyone can do it, it has got to be him. And it will be fascinating to watch that unfold.
When did he start?
He starts Wednesday morning. So the Paddy Buckley will be Wednesday. Then he'll cycle through till Thursday lunchtime, when he'll begin the Bob Graham. And that's we've sort of taken charge of his Bob Graham between myself and a few of other our team. So that will be amazing to see what happens. Of course, it may be over before it even starts. He may be behind schedule. He may get it done. Either way, fair play to him for giving it a go. So,
We'll
have a little recap on that next time. It'd be good to get him on the show, actually, just because although he's not British, he is living here now. And obviously, he's got stories from the US and Barclay that he can hopefully recount to us. So that's
that. That's cool.
Yeah. All right, mate.
Boss.
I wish you the best with your ongoing recovery. You're amazing.
Yeah.
Thanks for
man.
Thanks for entertaining. Yeah. And
yeah.
All right. Big love. See you all soon. Right. Cheers.
See you later, man. Yeah. Bye.
Bye.